I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow Podcast. I believe we all have a story to tell, and by sharing these stories, we can help and inspire each other on our self-care journeys. This season, I'm proud to team up with ReproMed, Ireland's leading fertility clinics. Having been through IVF myself, I understand how daunting a fertility journey can be. I'm proud to partner with ReproMed, whose world-class team offer the expertise, empathy, and compassionate care needed to help and support you. With clinics in Galway, Dublin, Cork, Drogheda, and Kilkenny, they are never too far away and will do everything possible to help you grow your family. Visit repromed.ie for more. And now their sister clinic, reproscan.ie, is available for early pregnancy and gender scanning. Welcome to the Good Glow Podcast with Cathy Wheatley. So I have been dying to release this episode of the podcast. I tapped Jamie on the shoulder on the way over to Spain as I was editing this podcast, and I said this could be the greatest episode that we have ever recorded. So Cathy welcomed her twins, Ted and Elsie, through surrogacy back in 2019. Her surrogate mother is called Ivana, and these two women have a bond like no other. They stayed in touch. They are great friends. So when Russia invaded Ukraine back in February, Cathy was so worried about Ivana and her three children, and she said if no one was willing to rescue them, that she would do it herself. Cathy left her family and travelled to Romania, and what happened next will blow your mind. Cathy is the bravest person that I have ever met. She is so kind, she is so caring, she is so loving. This is a story that will inspire you and will remind you that there is so much love in the world and that women are so, so powerful. Cathy is an amazing storyteller, and she really brings us on the journey with her to Romania. And what happened next will leave you with so much love in your heart for Cathy. Before we get into it, I just wanted to let you know we've limited tickets left for the Good Glow Live at the National Concert Hall. We've got the Dublin Gospel Choir booked in. We're going to have an incredible, uplifting night. I want everyone punching the air as they leave the concert hall on May 30th. I want to inspire you. I want to empower you. I want to encourage you to live your life the way you've always wanted. So nch.ie for tickets. I'll see you on May 30th. But in the meantime, let's listen to Cathy. Cathy, I'm so grateful to you for joining me on the Good Glow podcast today. And I wanted to start by asking you about this amazing earth angel in your life, Ivana. Can you tell us about the first time that you met her?
Yeah, so the first time I met Ivana, I suppose, was after the long road that everybody has before they go and decide to embark on a surrogacy journey. We flew out to Ukraine, St. Patrick's Day. 3 years actually to the day from when Ivana flew back to Ireland. So there's a certain serendipity to that.
Wow.
Which was amazing. But we flew out to Ukraine. We had been in touch with them and had, you know, decided what we were going to do and what we wanted to do. We asked, could we meet our surrogate on our first visit to Ukraine? It was really important to me to try and establish that relationship.
And was this before she was pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it was before she was pregnant. It was before the transfer took place. And so I really wanted to meet her and to know her and to get a sense of who she was, and also to let her know how much it meant to us that she was willing to do the most amazing thing and to carry her children for us, because I couldn't.
And what was that like? Because I didn't get it, obviously, as far as you in the process, but I know when I was matched with our surrogate, you have this instant bond or connection, a gratitude for them that is very difficult to explain. So what was that first encounter like for you?
But like similar to you, when we got matched and you got the photograph and you look at the woman who's going to carry your child, and all the emotions go flooding through you, you're trying to get your head around the fact, first of all. And in that moment, it does become very surreal. And you look at this woman who you've never met before, and all of a sudden you're going to give her the most precious thing in the world to you and entrust her with looking after it. And I suppose, yeah, when you see her profile and you get matched, you instantly feel a bond. You feel amazement that these women exist. Yeah. Utter amazement that, you know, a woman is willing to do this. And, you know, the gratitude that you feel instantly is unbelievable. And then when you're at that point and you've met her, and you've got to hold her and, you know, give her a hug and a squeeze just absolutely, you know, no words are needed. Language barrier doesn't. Absolutely, it has no effect at all, because, you know, I can feel her heart and she can feel mine. And I think there's something very special about two women helping each other in life. And to me, that's what surrogacy is. It's two women really coming together to create a partnership in pregnancy, and both for very different reasons, but both being equally amazed at the fact that there is such advances now that we're able to do this.
Wow, Cathy, you have such a beautiful way with words. I just already, you know, in this podcast, and I've heard other interviews that you've done, and your words stop me in my tracks at times. What was the feeling like when you held your twin babies in your arm and you were given the greatest gift of your life?
To explain that properly, I suppose I need to explain the fact that I was pregnant. I was had a really healthy pregnancy back in 2014, but unfortunately for me, that resulted in the loss of my baby girl, baby Helen, at birth. My uterus ruptured. I lost baby Helen. There was failures in my care in the hospital system. I was in a regional hospital, and so after that happened, there was a huge amount of grief involved, a huge amount of trying to come to terms with the fact that you don't get to be a mother to your beautiful baby girl, baby Helen, and then also the chance to be a mother to a living child is ripped away from you in the same instance. Is you know, my mental health suffered greatly. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. I had a long road before we even got to the point of deciding that surrogacy was where we wanted to be, because I think you need to be strong. You need to be mentally strong to go down the surrogacy route, because you have to be. It's not an easy task. The journey is arduous. You at all times can, any pregnancy is unknown. And when you're not in control of that pregnancy and you're given that control over to another woman, the journey is difficult at times. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's the most rewarding thing to have this relationship with a woman, but it is arduous. And so by the time we got to the point of being able to hold Ted and Elsie, the overwhelming thing that I just kept repeating time and time again was, when they were born, was, they're alive, they're alive, they're alive. Because that wasn't my normality. And my normality was to look at a sleeping baby in a cot that was never going to cry, that I would never get to mother. And so when Ted and Elsie were born and they were put into my arms, in that instance, my shattered, broken heart started slowly to piece back together, because the joy that I felt, the gift that I felt at getting to be their mother, filled me with so much love. And I know that Helen sent them to me. I believe that she had a role to play in this. And whether that was God or the universe or whatever, I know that she brought us all together, and she made it possible for me to meet Ivana and for me to get to mother her brother and sister, Teddy and Elsie. And in that moment, I felt like I had a reason to live again, because up until that point, I didn't.
It's so beautiful, because I think, especially on a surrogacy journey, I don't know if you felt like this, that it's hard to imagine the final step, which is getting a beautiful baby in your arms, because it's so much about paperwork. It's so much about waiting. It's so much about hoping. So to actually get a baby at the mm-hmm. end of it, like, I don't think my mind ever went to that point, because I think, you know, you take it in stages, don't you? And that's how you cope. But so you get your twins, your little gorgeous twins, and I presume at that point you try your best to make it home from Ukraine. And what year exactly was this, Kathy?
Ted and Elsie were born in November 2019, so just before the pandemic. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I never actually envisaged a time where I would be bringing my babies home. In my mind's eye, it was very clear, but to believe it was different, you know. In my head, throughout the whole journey, I had this image of walking through the doors in Dublin Airport, holding my babies. And that's what kept me going. And I had this image of my friends and family being there and finally just thinking, we've done it. This is our family. We've gone to the ends of the earth and we've done everything that we possibly can do to have them. But this is our family. And so in my mind's eye, that was very clear. But in reality, living day to day, I never truly believed that it would happen, because you dare to dream. You dare to dream that your babies are going to be safe. And that you're going to be a family finally. So in November 2019, we were really lucky. We got to spend 3 weeks in Ukraine. Ivana was very much with us for at least two of those weeks before she decided that she'd had enough of us and she wanted to head back to her own family.
So she stayed with you, did she?
Yeah, she stayed. So after the twins were born, Ivana was still in hospital. So the twins were in for 10 days in the neonatal unit, and we'd go every day to visit them, but we were also going every day to visit Ivana and to get her whatever she needed and to look after her. And in a, I suppose, an upside down turn of events, when Ivana was in hospital, she actually went in earlier than planned and her two children were with her. Her mum was due to come to take care of them, but she couldn't get there in time. So me and Keith took care of her kids while she was having her kids. And it was amazing to be able to do that, you know, to be able to nurture and care and let her know that her children were looked after during that time when she was in hospital. And so it really created a friendship, a bond. Sometimes I think that those words aren't enough to describe it. Ivana always just says that our minds are connected and our hearts are connected. And she's so beautifully eloquent at how she describes our relationship. But I'm privileged that I get to live it.
And it's such a personal journey. And often this is the side of a surrogacy journey that we may not hear so much, because I think people wonder about the relationship that you may have with your surrogate and what happens to this incredible woman who gives you this gift in the days after. So thank you so much for sharing that, because that's a very personal time.
It is, completely. And I think that's why you don't hear so much about it, is because you have to take everybody's wants and needs into consideration. You know, it's not very easy for intended parents to talk about that relationship if their surrogate doesn't want them to talk about that relationship either. And so I think any intended parent, at the forefront of their mind is the welfare and the needs of their surrogate. And both pre and post birth. And I think, like you say, people don't know what happens. You know, there's a general conception that this woman has carried these children, and then all of a sudden you disappear from her life. And that couldn't be further from the truth than any of the intended parents that I know. And you can't do that. You can't build a relationship with somebody, have them as part of your life, and then suddenly go, okay, I'm never going to speak to you again. It's just not. It's definitely not in the hearts of anyone I know. And we're very lucky, I think, as Irish people as well, from the intended parents that I meet. You know, it's not something that has ever taken place. Sometimes, you know, the surrogate chooses that she doesn't want to be in contact because she has her own family and she has her own stresses and what she wants. And then you have to accept that, because that's her choice as well. But they never leave your heart or your mind. And, you know,
that's so lovely.
Anybody who's had a child and looks at them, and especially on their birthday, you know, on their birthday, on the day that they were born, you don't just celebrate their birth. You celebrate the fact that this absolutely truly powerful woman gave birth to them for you. And so you celebrate her as well.
And Kathy, tell us about your experience of Ukraine and whereabouts were your babies born?
Yeah, so we were there several times. So we started off first, we went beforehand, then we went for egg collection, then we went over again for the 20-week scan. we were all the time going to Lviv, which is on the western side of Ukraine. You hear about it in the news now, unfortunately. But beautiful, beautiful city, and really historical city. And actually, it was quite funny because my mum and dad, we were due to go on holidays to Lanzarote in the September, that Ted and Elsie were due to be born in the November. And I remember my mum looking at me and saying, "Sure, why are we going to Lanzarote? My grandkids are in Ukraine, let's go there on holidays." And so we did. We all set off on our holidays over to Lviv and had a wonderful holiday there. So very much it's a cosmopolitan European type city, and we felt very at home there at every point. And when the twins were born, then of course we got to spend 3 weeks there, and so it's a very special place to us. And you know, it will always be part of our lives. It's part of the twins' heritage. It's part of their story, and it's very important for them to know their story.
Mm. And since then, since 2019, since you held your babies in your arm in Dublin, in your arms in Dublin Airport, and came home, you, Cathy, didn't stop there and get on with the rest of your life. You are a part of Irish Families Through Surrogacy, and it's important for you. Well, you can tell me why it didn't stop there for you.
Yeah, so we have a photograph at home of that moment that we landed in Dublin Airport. It was the 8th of December. It was traditionally farmer shopping day, and my husband is a farmer. And so when we came through the doors, he was like, "Oh, look, they're all up for their shopping in Dublin." But it was literally all our family were there. I mean, like, it was such a large crowd of people, our aunts and uncles, our cousins, friends, extended family. It was.
Cathy, like, how many? Give us a rough number.
So there was about between 70 and 100 people there waiting on. Yeah.
You are joking.
No.
In Dublin Airport.
In Dublin Airport, yeah. And everybody was like, "What's going on? Who's coming out here?" But, you know, it was literally, yeah, it was unbelievable. And they had balloons and banners and all of that. My husband, Keith, was mortified, like absolutely mortified. And I remember just coming out and feeling the wall of love that hit us as we came out, and the welcome that everybody had, you know, for our beautiful babies that not just we waited on, but our families and our community waited on, because yes, everyone was very much part of the journey with us. And for me, that was one of the happiest times in my life. But then as time went on, I realized that actually the reality is that was the moment that I lost the rights to my children. Right at that moment when I set foot in Ireland was when I was no longer recognized as being their mother. And the injustice of that absolutely didn't sit right with me. And the injustice of that happening to every other woman didn't sit right with me. And so with a group of mothers, we started Irish Families Through Surrogacy. And the twins were 1 year old. They turned one on the 13th of November. And we had our first meeting, I think, on the 14th of November. And from there, really, we just told our stories, and people became more comfortable in telling their stories, and people started to be able to talk about surrogacy and to celebrate surrogacy. And so the main aim of Irish Families Through Surrogacy at the time was to make sure that our children get the legal recognition and are treated equally to every other child in Ireland. And I suppose we'll do whatever we can to make sure that happens. And it doesn't sit well to think that your children are being discriminated against because of how they were born. Mm-hmm. And no matter how a child is conceived, a child is a child. And that child should be afforded the same rights as every other child. And so every mother knows that you'll fight with every bone in your body to make sure that your children are nurtured, loved and protected. And that's all we're doing in Irish Families Through Surrogacy is trying to make sure that is the case.
Yeah, and your work is absolutely inspiring. So, Cathy, tell me about the last couple of months and how you felt watching everything unfold. Did you believe that it was going to get to a point where what happened happened? Because I feel like the news coming out of Ukraine was maybe different to the mm-hmm. news we were hearing.
Absolutely, completely. I mean, we talk to Ivana regularly. So we'd talk to her about once a week, you know, before the invasion happened. And we'd video chat and we'd look at her kids and say hello, and they'd look back. And actually, there was Ludmilla, her little baby, who's 5 months old. She was being christened just before the invasion happened. And we were thinking of going over there for it. But due to the delayed process of getting a passport for Ted and Elsie, because I'm not entitled to apply for a passport for them. So it's my husband who has to do that. And so their passports were delayed and we didn't get it in time, which is unbelievable as well, because if we did, then we would have been there for the invasion and all that that would have entailed with 2-year-old twins. You know, I was talking to Ivana the night before. She was going the next day to have a coffee, going to the park. The kids were going to meet their friends. They were going to their groups. Everything was completely normal. At no point did she believe that it was going to happen, much like everybody else in Ukraine. But it just changed overnight. And the next phone call that I had with her was when they were barring up their windows and barricading their windows and pulling their mattresses out into the hallways. And it just happened instantly, and her life changed instantly, like all of Ukrainian people. And because I was in regular contact with her, I got to see it, you know, I got to see it unfold, just as if you're watching it on the news. But this is a family that you love, a family that has done everything for you. And you just think, I need to do something for them. Watching her children not being able to play outside and being confined to the house because of the dangers that were there. And in this day and age, that shouldn't be happening. And it shouldn't be happening in a way that it did happen. It was so unexpected, so out of the blue. There was no way to prepare the children or themselves for it. And just to see the fear that she'd have every time I spoke to her, and our daily messages changed from being, how are you, to I'm alive, all is okay. The reality of that was absolutely confronting.
What do you do? Because you're in crisis at that point. What was those days like for you? Obviously torturous. So,
yeah, really, really torture. Instantly, I tried to convince Ivana to come to Ireland. And Ivana is, nobody gets Ivana to do what she doesn't want to do. So Ivana's like, no, I'm staying. I'm helping my country. And so we started to do something practically. We started to send money over for her to be able to help her family. And then after a couple of days, we realized that the money that I was sending over, Ivana was using to buy humanitarian aid for the people in the town. And she was going out and looking after the people who had been bombed on the first night, because her town was bombed on the very first night of the invasion because there was an airbase there. And so some of the people were left homeless. She then took in 16 people into her house because they had nowhere to go, and looked after them until they could sort out accommodation elsewhere. So I suppose at all times, my admiration for Ivana has always been huge. But to see what she did during the worst time in her life as well was just, she was mighty. I always knew she was a mighty woman, but the reality was that she was doing what she had always done, is putting other people first, in terms of even carrying a pregnancy for me and Keith, in looking after people. It's part of who she is to nurture and care. And so I couldn't convince her to leave because she absolutely wanted to help the people in her town. And she did, and she did a fantastic job. But I suppose things changed rapidly because of her son. And that was, her son had gone to her mum's house on his midterm break. They were on a break from school. And the mum came down and said, I'll take him back to my house and give you a break, because she's a small baby. And so she did. And he was 5 hours away. It was, they were separated, and she couldn't get to him. And in the beginning, we thought that there was a chance that she could get to him. And, you know, from being in the Ukraine, and I have lots of contacts in drivers and nannies and, you know, everybody, I exhausted all options of trying to get her to him to pick him up, or trying to get him to her. And it just wasn't a possibility. And she was heartbroken that, even though she knew he was safe with her mother, she didn't know he was safe because of the war. And in times like that, I suppose all you want to do is to be able to put your arms around your child and hold them and touch them and feel the tangibility of them in your arms, so that you can try and do what you can to keep them safe. And her mind would constantly worry about what would happen when she wasn't with him. And so that was the point that we got a phone call to say that there was shelling extensively in the town where her mum was, and Sergio was in real danger. The Russians were in the forest surrounding the town where some of their bases were, and there was no way to get him out.
Oh,
and so
God.
Ivana was desperate at that point and willing to do whatever she could to get to him and get him out. And that was the point that the decision was made that she was going to try and come to Ireland. And once she made that decision, then we had to try and figure out a way to execute it and do it. And the only people that I knew that was doing something like that was the two men from Scotland who are the gardeners who are going around Ukraine and taking people out from these areas that nobody else will go into. And so I started off on my stalking journey of constantly messaging them and sending pictures of Ted and Elsie and telling them our story and telling them about Ivana and what a special woman she was and begging them to do whatever they could to get her and her son reunited and get them out into safety.
Oh my God, Cathy, I've chills listening to this. Oh God. So you're obviously doing all you can to get them out and reunite them. How did you feel at this point? Were you okay yourself?
No, I absolutely just wanted to go there. So the first instinct that I had was, if nobody else will get them, then I will. That was a conversation that wasn't going down well at home, as you can imagine. And I suppose, you know, realistically, my husband, who's the voice of reason in all things, said to me, you know, we need to find a way. We will find a way, but we need to stay calm and not jump into this. And we can't put anybody in danger because, Cathy, you're not equipped to get them out of there in the same way as people who are experienced in doing it are. And so he also, of course, was worried about my safety, about Ted and Elsie being left without a mother. And the reality hit home when he said to me, you know, we fought so hard to have these children and I can't have them if they don't have you as their mother. And I just thought, I can't put my family at risk, but also I couldn't leave her family at risk. So the conflict inside me was immense, absolutely immense. And, you know, I decided at that point that I would do whatever I could, but also be mindful of the risks to my family. And, I had to do that for my husband, for my family. And, you know, we all know that if I didn't have Ted and Elsie, then I probably would have just gone ahead and gung hold all guns blazing myself, gone in there and really into the unknown, which would have been absolutely stupid. So I'm glad that I have a voice of reason at home in that way. And so we just kept looking at what we could do. There's certain organizations that are getting people out. I was in touch with the Ukrainian community here in Ireland. They were hugely supportive to me. We had been successful, you know, in getting other Ukrainian people evacuated just through our contacts in the Ukrainian community in Ireland. But unfortunately for the situation of Ivana and her son, that wasn't the case. So I just kept thinking, what can I do? So the plan was to then head as close as I could to Romania or to Ukraine and try and organize some way to get her out of there. But thankfully, I answered the phone one day and it was Joe, who's an Englishman who is from Scotland, living in Scotland. And he just said to me, as easy as if he was popping to the shops, we're going to pop down to Ivana on Sunday. And I just couldn't believe it. I absolutely couldn't believe it that first of all, he was so calm, took everything in his stride. But the fact that he had decided that Ivana, as they call it, mission, that Ivana's mission was going to be their next mission, just floored me. Absolutely floored me. The relief that I felt. There's no words to describe. I feel like at that moment, all the blood drained from my body because I couldn't actually physically believe that somebody was going for her, but he was, and he did.
Oh, Cathy, what a woman. I am so excited for you to hear what happens next. First, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank ReproMed for supporting The Good Glow. A fertility journey is so personal, and ReproMed pride themselves in taking compassionate interest in your care. Having spent time with the team, I know they will provide you with everything you need to know about treatment options in a safe, supportive, and honest environment. ReproMed.ie is packed full of information on IVF, egg donation, fertility preservation, and so much more. For all you need to know, head over to ReproMed.ie.
And how was she reunited with her son?
So Joe and Gary, the two guys, went to Ivana's house, picked her up. She is near the city of Marud, and they headed once they picked her up, they headed over to her mother to try and get over there. And she is near Kharkiv. So that was a big mission at that point. And so they did. It was a couple of hours away. They traveled over. They got there and they reunited her with Sergio. And then they all stayed in the mammy's house and had dinner and a cup of tea, just like you do in the middle of a war zone.
Oh, God. It's such a part about this, having a cup of tea and sitting down. It's so human. So when they're in the car being rescued, like obviously their life is at risk at every second of that journey.
100%. I mean, on previous missions, the guys had been shot at, their tires were shot out. The car was stopped. They were robbed. A vehicle was taken from them. You know, this isn't an easy journey to get through. It isn't like the way, I suppose if you listen to Gary and to Joe, they are so calm and cool and they just take it as it comes, which is amazing. But the reality is very different. And so when they're in that car at every point, every minute, I'm hugely concerned about their safety and also the fact that, you know, they are at more risk than they've ever been at home because they are traveling on a road out of Ukraine. And it was huge pressure. It was huge pressure mentally to try and believe that everything was going to be okay and to keep that positivity and to keep, you know, to keep that absolute belief that, again, in my mind's eye, I could see the moment that I had Ivana and her children in my arms, and to believe that that was going to happen. And it took a lot within me to make sure that that was what was at the forefront of my mind. And I also had decided that I would set out on the road to try and meet her at the border. So I left Ireland, and travel to Romania. Because
how did you feel leaving, Cathy?
I felt sad leaving Ted and Elsie. I haven't really left them at all, so it was pretty surreal. They're 2.5, and I was suddenly going to leave them. And most of the time was taken up with practical things, you know, like Daddy, here's their snacks, and who's going to mind them, and what's going to happen, and so really their needs were at the forefront of my mind before I left, and I didn't really have time to think about it till I was sitting on the plane to Romania and thinking, you know, that this journey that I was making, I didn't know what was going to happen, but it was nowhere near the journey that Ivana and her children had to make. So at least I was leaving my kids, but I was leaving them at home, happy, healthy and comfortable, yeah. In a country that they, you know, wasn't at war and that their daddy was there to look after them. He wasn't out fighting a war. And so it was a very different thing. And I just took it as a practical trip that I had to take. And so I arrived in Bucharest and headed down south towards the border town of Galati, I think it's called, because the guys had said that that was probably where Ivana would cross. I was in the car on the way down there with a driver and we got a phone call to say that fighting had broke out in Odessa and there was no way the guys would be able to take that route. So we had to, I suppose, pivot again on what our plans were. And they said they'd try and head for the northern town of Suret. And so the driver agreed to take me there. So we drove through the night up to the northern town of Suret and got there in the early hours of the morning. There was no hotels to be had because everything was full of volunteers and refugees and people, trying to help. And so got to try and sleep for an hour or two in the car. And then the driver had to return to Bucharest. So I went into a hotel lobby and just asked them, could I stay there until I got news of when Ivana would be crossing? And I met up with an organization called the Fight for Freedom organization in Romania. And they were fantastic. And I told them what was happening. And they said, let us know when you need to go and we'll get you a driver and a van so that you can go to the border and pick them up. So really, you know, again, it was the serendipity of it all, the fact that that was the hotel I went to, that was the people that I met who were willing to do this. It was unbelievable. And then I got the call to say that Ivan and the boys were on the road with Joe and Gary, and also traveling as part of that mission was Yuri, a Paralympian, and his mum, who had stage 4 cancer. And so they were all making their way to the border together. And so I just went to the border and wanted to wait there so that as soon as I could possibly get them I would be there. And then we got a phone call to say that, unfortunately, because of the delays in traveling, the guys would have to leave them at the border on the other side in Ukraine. And they had to return back so that they'd be back before the curfew, because you can't travel after the curfew. It's too dangerous. And so I was literally about 20 kilometers away from where Ivana was being left. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't stay there. At that point, I would have walked over there even just to be with her and travel the rest of the way with her. But I was really lucky because the van that we had, the guy who was driving it, he couldn't drive into Ukraine. He wouldn't drive into Ukraine. He thought I was mad asking him to drive into Ukraine. But
and you're like, I am.
Yeah. And I kept asking and he was like, no. And so then I was like in the refugee camp on the Romanian side, the safe side. And I thought, what am I going to do? And then I realized that my brother had worked with a Romanian guy, Livu, and he had given us the name of a man, a volunteer called Vali, who was working on the Suret border, which we didn't think we'd be going to, because I thought I'd be going down south. But it turns out that the Suret border was where I ended up. And so I rang the number that was given to me and I said, are you around? I need someone to drive me to the Ukraine. And he said, OK, I'll do it. And I said, how will I find you? And he said, I think I'm standing behind you. And I turned around and he was there. And it was so many things happened the whole time. I'm clutching my little teddy bear that Felicon had given me when Helen was born, that was with Helen in her cool cot for the whole time we had her, and that I keep with me. And I'm just saying, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being so amazing and looking after your mommy and looking after your brothers and sisters. And we started planning how we were going to get in. The guys left Ivana and the people in the refugee camp. And we started the process of trying to cross into Ukraine. And I was naive in that I didn't realize that there'd be a queue to get into Ukraine. I knew there'd be a queue to get out of it, but I absolutely didn't envision that there'd be a queue to get into Ukraine. And so we were faced with between a 5 and a 7 hour wait to just get in. But if Ivana was to try and walk over the border or get out, it could have taken her about 3 days at that point. So I knew that that was not, and then we'd have to do it. And then in the utter belief that everything has been sent to me by universe or the God or Helen or somebody, I don't know, but it was definitely all lining up. Van tried to cut across us, and Vali, the driver, rolled down the window and said, hey, where are you going? And he said, oh, we're a Uruguayan diplomat. I'm a Uruguayan diplomat and I'm providing humanitarian aid. So we're cutting the queue. Would you let us in? And Vali said, yeah, sure. And he let him in front of us. And then I saw what happened, and they literally drove by all the cars and right up to the front. And the guy had given us his business card. And I said to Vali, ring him. And he said, what do you want me to say to him? And I said, ask him, can we join up with the convoy? And Vali was like, OK, brilliant, like absolutely brilliant. And he rang him and he said, listen, you know, we're on a humanitarian mission too. Explain the story to him. And the guy said, give me a few minutes. And then my phone rang back and it was him. And he said, OK, you're part of our convoy now. Head to the guards and head on through. And so we got to the guards and they lifted the barriers and we drove straight to the next checkpoint, which was at the Ukrainian side. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God. I know I keep saying, oh my God. How did you feel when you crossed into Ukraine?
I felt elated that I was there. Yeah. And there was no fear or anything like that. I just felt elated that I was there and I knew that I was going to get her soon. But the minute we crossed, the atmosphere changed and there was a deadness to the air that surrounded me. And I knew that things were very different here than they had been 5 minutes ago. And then when you get to the refugee camp and you see the reality of the mother and children and the older people there, it hits home that this is a war and it's a war zone. And these people are just like us, and their lives have been turned upside down, and they have to try and make their way to safety in conditions that nobody should ever have to face. And that was a stark reality for me at that point. I wanted to bring everyone home. I didn't know how I was going to, you know, leave there and leave all those people behind. And that killed me inside. My heart was breaking. My heart was breaking for them. But I knew, you know, if I was practically thinking about it, that I couldn't help everybody, and the only people that I could help was Ivana and her children. And so I started to try and run around the camp looking for her. And it was huge. And her battery was about to go dead on her phone. And I was ringing her and she couldn't answer. And yeah, that point was very, the adrenaline was just pumping through my veins because I just kept thinking, I have to find her. I have to find her. I have to get her. I have to get her. Valley was running. It was just, the whole thing was yeah, the whole thing was really like something you see in a film, and you're living it and you're thinking, this isn't happening, but it was. And then I could hear, she was shouting because I was shouting her name and she was shouting my name, and I could hear it in the distance. And there was a big white tent where all the refugees were inside.
And you, I could hear your name.
I could hear my name. And so I just went running as fast as I could towards the tent. And then one of the volunteers came out and started shouting, here, here, she's here, she's here. And he lifted up the tarpaulin and she just collapsed into my arms.
Oh my.
And sorry, I'm hugely emotional about that moment, because I knew from that moment, no matter what happened, that I was going to carry her. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. She carried my family and now was my time to carry hers.
Oh God.
So I knew at that point that no matter what else happened, we'd be okay. We'd manage it. We'd do it together, just like we had when she was having Ted and Elsie.
Yeah.
And so then Sergio and Oleg came running out in the chaos of two little kids, 5 and 7. And again, strangely surreal, we went inside the tent and we had a cup of tea. You can't bring the Irish anywhere. We had a cup of tea and I made a bottle for Ludmilla, her little girl. And Yuri and his mum Vera were there as well. And so obviously I wasn't going to leave them there. They'd travel the road with Ivana. I had enough room in the van for them. So I arranged for them to come back too. And we loaded up the van and we headed back to the border, to the Romanian border, and started the process of the documents being given, whatever documents they had, and being let through into Romania. I was very lucky as well in that the contact that my brother had, like, this is just like an ordinary, like, Kilkenny community together. And the contact that my brother had, he'd contacted the Romanian embassy and they were hugely supportive of me and what I was doing. And they gave me the number of a policewoman at the border police called Angela, so that if we ran into any problems, Angela was there on the phone. It's amazing. It's amazing. The world is a small place.
Yeah. You forget that there is, like, people that you know or that someone knows that are just out there helping people.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah. To me, it was just, you know, like, absolutely. Like, I only had to make one phone call, but Livu had to make 100 phone calls, but he did it. And he got me in contact with these people. Just like it would be the same if it was the other way around, you know, when you're in Ireland and somebody knows somebody who knows somebody and you're ringing around going, you know, what can we do to help this woman? And so for me, I was very much supported, especially by the Romanian community. Unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable support. Wow. And we got through, we came back, and within a couple of hours we were in the hotel. And I was so relieved to have Ivana's family in the hotel. But actually, for me, mentally, the hotel was probably one of the worst places that I was, because as a mother of a stillborn baby who didn't cry at birth, all you wanted was to hear the sound of a baby crying, you know, and that's a real minute when you just can't believe that she's not going to cry. And you're begging with every fiber of your being to hear that baby cry, to hear my little girl cry. And it didn't happen. Then when we got to the hotel, all I heard from the whole night surrounding me. We were in the middle floor, and surrounding me was the sound of children crying and the sound of their distress and trauma. And that sound stays with me because these poor children have no clue what's happening, but they know that something's not right. And the echoes of the children crying is what I hear now.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. I can't. So when did you come to Dublin then?
So then we started the process of trying to get flights home, which was crazy because the flights home were looking at between 1,500 and 2,000 euros for us to fly home, which is a disgrace. But anyway, I won't get started on that.
I've seen the stories of that. But just in that moment when you have gone there and risked your life and witnessed what you've witnessed, to have that at the end of it.
Yeah, it was really difficult, you know, and you're trying to figure out, you know, what we can do, and stopping off somewhere wasn't an option because we don't know, you know, we could get lots of flights to the UK. But the reason why the flights to the UK were cheap was because it was very difficult for Ukrainian people to get in and out of the UK because of the visa system that they have there. So, you know, really, it was a blockage that, again, I didn't envisage. I just thought we'd, you know, get to Romania and get a flight home. But the cost was a huge issue for us. And in the end, we had no choice but to pay it. I was very lucky, you know, people offered to help us with it. And that was amazing. But we're so thankful, absolutely so thankful to the people who donated money through that. No, we didn't ask them to, like, they just did it themselves. Like, I literally just, people sent money to my Revolut. It was mad, you know what I mean? Just people that we know or that friends of ours know, and we're forever grateful to that. But I think at that point then, we're getting on a plane. Ivana and the children's first time on a plane, an air machine, as she calls it. She hates it. She's never going again, she said. She's the only time she'll get on a plane again is to go home to Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
So she absolutely hates it. And it was hugely stressful because, again, the documents and trying to get on and you know, very difficult. And we're getting on the plane and we're flying home. And again, I'm still thinking, is this actually going to happen? Is it going to happen? Are we going to land in Dublin? You know, and is it going to happen? And, you know, thankfully we landed in Dublin and we were going to passport control. And this was the first time I was going to passport control, and I didn't know what to expect because we'd had difficulties at every other border, every other passport control, you know. Not that people weren't willing to help, they were, but it was just challenging. Mm-hmm. And we got to the passport control in Ireland and they said to me, "Welcome home." And they looked at Ivana and they said to her, "Welcome to your new home." And I just broke down in tears because I was so incredibly proud that this was the welcome that the Ukrainian people were getting to Ireland. And Ivana was inconsolable at that point as well, because she said that, speaking to her afterwards, she said that that was the point that the adrenaline left her body. That was the point that she knew.
She could rest.
That she could rest, that they were safe. Now, of course, she's completely conflicted because of her family in Ukraine. And, you know, she's constantly thinking of them or constantly in touch with them. But for her and her three children, that was the point that she thought, this is going to be okay.
It's so beautiful.
And then we walked out the doors, and not quite the 70 to 100 people, but our family were there waiting on us. And it just, absolutely, everybody just ran to Ivana and her children, and they had everything there for them that they could need there and then, and toys and games for the children. And Irish Families Through Surrogacy, of course, have been a huge support to me, you know, in doing all of this. And our chairperson was there. And like, this was 3 o'clock in the morning. It wasn't an easy task to get up there and get her children minded. And it was absolutely amazing. Like I say, Kira was there with her husband. And Ivana knew that it wasn't just me, that there was a whole extended community of people that were there to support her and to support other families. And it's what we're trying to do, you know, in Irish Families Through Surrogacy, is there's lots of people who've done this. I'm not a hero. I'm just one person who has some sort of a profile in Irish families through surrogacy that I get to tell my story. But there are lots of families who are taking in their surrogate mothers, past and previous. And absolutely, you know, it's the right thing to do. If you can do it, it's the right thing to do. And it's, I feel like, just a natural thing to do.
And I know that you didn't do it to be a hero or anything like that. Yeah. But Cathy, you're the bravest person I know. I am honoured to hear this story and for you to come on the Good Glow and tell your story, because it's so personal. I've two more questions for you. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, how can people help you now? Or, you know, is that an option? What can we do?
I think the biggest thing that people can do to help me and Ivana now is to contact their TDs and tell them that there is a huge injustice happening in our country, because I sit at my breakfast table in the morning and Ivana sits there and she has a coffee and I have a cup of tea and my children are running around the place, and Ivana is in Ireland recognised legally as being their mother and I'm not. And that's a stark reality to face when it's in your house at your kitchen table.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky with Ivana that I have a brilliant relationship with her. And, you know, she absolutely understands that I'm the children's mother, recognizes me as being so, and laughs, because, you know, the last thing in the world she wants is to have to deal with two twins in the middle of the 2-year-old tantrums. But and we laugh together over it. But really, that is the biggest thing. I mean, she is in Ireland classed as being their mother legally. She has 3 children of her own to look after. The last thing she needs is to think that there's a possibility that she might be responsible for my children. And then the last thing that I need as a mother who has done everything possible to have my children is to not be recognized as their mother. And for them, it's very, very surreal. I know that I've done the right thing in bringing Ivana here, because there was no other option in my mind, but there is implications for them. And I have to think about that. Now, we're very open with Ted and Elsie from the beginning. You know, I'd read them books and I talk to them. And even now it's really cute because she's here and I say, "Who's Ivana?" And they say, "My tummy mummy." And that's how we've explained it to them. And I said, why was Ivana your tummy mummy? And then they point to my tummy and they say, "Because mummy's tummy was broken." And it breaks it down to that basic level of mummy's tummy was broken. And so Ivana carried them in her tummy. And I really believe that if 2.5-year-old can understand it, you know, the powers that be need to understand it. And I do understand, you know, as a woman, I want to make sure that all women are protected and that their rights are protected. And so I understand that it's a complex issue, but it's not outside the realm to be able to properly look after everybody involved. And as an advocacy group, I suppose, as well, that's what we want. We want everybody involved to be protected. But more so than anything, we want our children to be protected, because they don't have a voice and we have to be their voice. And I'm very lucky. Ivana is an extremely strong woman. She tells me every day, "Let me talk to these people. I will tell these people." And she said, "Who are these people who say, just because I am from a poor country, that I don't know my own mind or my own body?" And I think that's the thing, is that she absolutely knows her own mind and her own body. I hope, you know, that the government will be able to see that. And so the only thing that people can do for us is literally tell their TDs that this has to be, the time is now, there is no more time. And so that's what they can do. They can say, they can stand with us and say, this isn't acceptable.
What is your everyday life like at the moment, Cathy?
I laugh because when we were having the twins, my mum described it. Somebody said to her, "What's it going to be like, you know, to have these babies and you know, to be their grandmother, and for Cathy to be their mother and Keith to be their father, and to experience everyday life?" And my mum described it so eloquently when she said, "It will be beautiful pandemonium." and she was right. That's exactly what it is, you know, just before it was beautiful pandemonium. And now it's beautiful pandemonium multiplied by 5, because we have 5 children now in the house. We have me, Ivana, and the children in a little two-bedroomed cottage down near Hollywood and Dunlavin in Wicklow. And it's amazing. It's funny. It's a learning curve. It's all of those things. I'm now doing a school run, which I thought I had would have loads of time to be able to do. But the reality of that is hilarious. And so, no, it's beautiful and it's lovely to get to know the boys. And even, you know, Ted and Elsie, them adapting. And so there's a beautiful relationship forming between them as well. And then Baby Luda is there, of course, Baby Luda Miller. And it's like to see her is amazing and lovely. But one thing that is so heartbreaking for my husband, Keith, is in the evening times when she gets to talk to her, if she gets to talk to her daddy, you know, he comes on, you know, he talks to the boys when they're outside playing and stuff. But with the baby, you know, he wants to say goodnight and he comes on and she's a really quiet baby. But the animation at 5 and 6 months that you see when she sees his face on the video chat and hears his voice and she starts to respond to him. And it's so beautiful to look at. But the reality is, and for Keith, he finds it extremely hard. He said to me the other day, I can't be here. He said, I can't be here because he said, I know what it would like to be. I can feel what it would like to be that father who is separated from their children and can only look at them on video chat. And, you know, a little small baby like that, they've not had enough time together. And you can see that it's absolutely heartbreaking for all of them. And that's the reality part. And then you have the mayhem and the craziness of trying to fit everybody into a little Hyundai i30 when we have no room. And so everybody, we have to do things like separately all the time. And it breaks my heart sometimes because I have to leave Ivana at home. Because, you know, I just don't have enough room. And then we laugh because like, everything went right over there. But since we've got home, we've had really run a bad luck. We bought a machine, as Ivana calls it, just a secondhand 7-seater car. And it broke down on the motorway on our first use. And then we went to get it fixed. And my husband picked it up and said, it's grand. We're back in business. And it broke down again on the way home. So we're literally going, the luck now has run out. But it doesn't matter because we're safe. So we'll deal with all of that. And it's in getting fixed and it'll be back soon. But yeah, that's the biggest challenge that we have is trying to...
The everyday life of going from a family of four to a family of seven. Family of eight.
So we have little Luda as well. I'm even
family
like...
Family of eight.
Yeah. So it is crazy, but it's like, I always say our house is small, but our hearts are big and they are expanding every minute that we get to have Ivana and her family with us. And it's just an amazing experience that I'm so privileged that I get to live every day.
Oh, Cathy, I could talk to you for another hour about life, what life is like for you now, but we'll do it again. I'm so grateful to you for sharing your story. And if there's anything that I can do to help or just let me know. But
thanks, Georgie.
You're an amazing person and it's an absolute honour to call you a friend. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you. You're so easy to talk to. It's always just like every time we meet you, you are just amazing to us. So thank you so much for being our friend and not just for me, but from Irish Family Through Surrogacy as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Good Glow podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe. Please leave a review. That all really helps. And I think this really proves that international surrogacy is so much more than going over, collecting your baby and getting on with the rest of your life. International surrogacy creates friendships and bonds that last a lifetime. So let's write to our TDs if we can and support Cathy. Thank you so much to ReproMed for supporting the Good Glow. And as I said, if you'd like to join us at the National Concert Hall on May 30th, please do. You can head over to nch.ie for tickets. Until next time.